Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Thomas Senna, co-host of the SNL Hall of Fame podcast.
And I'm Jeremy Dove, co-host of the Bigger Than the Game podcast.
Jeremy and I have joined forces to create a new podcast called Pop Culture 5 to ask the question, what are the five essential things about any given pop culture topic?
It could be five essential movies by an actor of our choice.
Or five essential songs by a musician of our choice.
We're not making a list of our personal favorites, it's the essentials.
And we better do a good job of justifying our essentials, because one of us will have veto power each episode.
And I'm ready to tell Thomas why he's wrong.
All right, Jeremy, all right. Well, actually, why don't we give everyone an out-of-context peek at what we've been up to? So Pharrell was right next to me, and we looked at each other, and we were kind of like bobbing our heads. He wasn't wearing his hat. Nobody really knew he was kind of wearing. He was kind of incognito. But I had to do a double take. I'm like, that's Pharrell. And then he looked at me.
You just slipped that in there, big name drop here. I was next to my man Pharrell. I never heard this, everyone.
So join us to celebrate and discuss the essentials of pop culture.
Listen and subscribe to Pop Culture 5 wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, it's time to gather around the water cooler to talk the SNL Hall of Fame. Hey, it's JD here, and we're back at the SNL Hall of Fame. Myself, there's Matt walking down. I'm not going to go all the way down to the conversation room. We're going to stop in the lunchroom here with our friends Joe and Shari. Hey, Joe, how's it going, my friend? Good and guggling. Wow. Look at you conjugating that verb. Nice. Shari, what's up?
Hey, JD, I'm glugging away.
Excellent. Well, today we've got a really interesting show to talk about. And I say it's interesting because in the history of the SNL Hall of Fame, duos or trios, have not fared well. From Franken and Davis to frickin' The Lonely Island took three tries to get in. It's absolutely flabbergasting to me that it's so difficult. And we've got another pair with Bonnie and Terry Turner. John Schneider joined Bill Kenny to break down the nomination of Bonnie and Terry Turner, and it was a great episode. But I'd like to hear you break that episode down, Shari, if you wouldn't mind.
Not at all. I absolutely loved this episode. In fact, I was thinking that I think it's my favorite of the three that we've listened to thus far. I really enjoyed this one. I've loved all three, but I really enjoyed this one. JD, I think you and Joe already know my absolute love of the SNN, the Saturday Night Network. And absolutely. I'm a huge fan of John's and everybody over there. They do such great work. And of course, I had been a huge fan of Bill's before he joined our motley crew. And so it was great to see the two of them with, as John himself said, the tables turned, with Bill being the lead over at the Hall of Fame. And what a fabulous discussion. These two are so remarkably knowledgeable about everything Saturday Night Live, and certainly had lots to say about Bonnie and Terry Turner. From their very beginnings, I had no idea that they had met Jan Hooks on, okay, not Tush, Tush. I've been saying it, apparently we've all been saying it wrong. It's Tush. Thank you, Bill Kenny. And so from their very beginnings there to their time working very closely with Jan and Dana and all of the remarkable sketches that they've done and the characters they helped create, including, I think, and I don't think many would dispute it, even if you're not crazy about the sketch, probably the biggest recurring sketch of all time, freaking Wayne's World.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they deep dove so far beyond that into sketches I had forgotten all about and characters that I had not remembered. So great work, John and Bill, reminding us of these legendary writers and how important writers are to the show's process. And I hope that Bonnie and Terry are going to get in. I'm hoping, JD, with that unlimited votes this year, that they're going to slide right in, because Bill and John really did do a great job of pointing out how remarkable they are, and even included an examination, a brief examination of their work after the show, which was super impressive. Concluding with their discussion of reuniting with Jan on Third Rock from the Sun, and of course, the fabulous That 70s Show. And now they even came out of retirement to work on That 90s Show. So come on, let's give these two their due, right?
I think so. It's going to be interesting, though. It's like, again, the duo thing combined with writing. Oh boy, I hope you're right, Shari, that the unlimited ballots work in our favor as we bid adieu to people at the end of this season. Well, let's do some comparing and contrasting. We'll stick with you, Shari. Who in the Hall of Fame already might be somebody that you could compare to Bonnie and Terry Turner that may have a similar path?
Well, I'm going to do the two of the obvious writers. One that just got in. And Joe, there's another. JD, there's another. Joe and JD, I should say. There's another writer who, why didn't he get in a long time ago? The fabulous Jack Handy.
Right.
He's got his fingerprints all over everything, just like the Turners. And I would say Mr. Smigel as well, Bill Kenny's best friend, as he jokes often. Because he was fortunate enough to email back and forth with Mr. Smigel. I believe they still do communicate.
Wow.
And he also, in fact, he was there at the same time and I believe worked with the Turners. So I feel like Handy and Smigel are very similar in the fact that they were so essential to the show during their time, and that they're both connected to super memorable sketches, just like the Turners. So I think all of them need to be in there. And I'm so happy that Jack Handy got in last year.
Me too.
It's about time.
Me too. I thought he was a slam dunk the first time out. But it's that curse of the people that aren't hosts or aren't cast members, you know? So there's that. I think that's a great, great comp. Or those are great comps. And if there is a karma in the universe, then they will succeed where others have failed in the past and get in on the first ballot. Joe, do you have a comparison?
Well, yeah, the one that I thought was more obvious that you already brought up, JD, is Franken and Davis, which is another comedy duo, you know, that wrote together at Saturday Night Live during a golden age. You know, Franken and Davis did it the first 5 years, and Bonnie and Terry did it the second golden age. Just a pair of writers And then someone else who, and again, this is just more of a personal thing. I'm not sure if this is a Hall of Fame thing, but they also remind me of Bob Odenkirk in the sense that they're able to write for pre-existing characters. I know it's kind of outside Hall of Fame, but just a quality worth mentioning is they're able to just show up to the show, you know, to SNL, see what's already there, and just add, and even in maybe even improve on what's already there with Wayne's World, Pat Stevens, Church Chat, and just elevate. So, you know, they remind me of Franken and Davis, and, you know, just in the sense that they're a comedy team, but they have their own identity in the sense that they're able to, you know, improve what's already there and come up with original stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Joe. And I totally agree about Odenkirk, because I know we also talk about nominees who are not in the Hall of Fame yet. And Odenkirk is the obvious because he was attached to Matt Foley and helped make Matt Foley better with Chris Farley,
right,
the way the Turners helped Dano with the Church Lady, and then Mike Myers, who I don't know, I'm sure you guys have heard the scuttlebutt about how Mike Myers didn't want anybody messing with his vision, but I think the Turners charmed him. They seem like really nice humans, like nice people. And I think they charmed him into letting, you know, letting go of his baby a little. And they, I think they made Wayne's World 10 times along with Dana as well.
Absolutely.
Who, by the way, it was Mike Myers, you know, back in Canada. JD, your people give us the best comedy and don't get enough credit for it. I mean, you're the reason we have SNL, you Canadians. Lorne Michaels, for gosh sakes.
I was interviewing somebody this week for a music podcast, and he was talking about, you know, the Canadian penchant for producing talent. And he said it's got to be something to do with the absurdity of our life. The fact that if we're not wearing the proper clothes, we could die. I just thought that was really amusing. We wouldn't really die if we weren't wearing the proper clothes. I'll put that out there, you know. Shari, you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah. Again, as I was saying, and when I got on my Canadian praising tangent, and I didn't finish my thought, Mike Myers was very resistant, very, very resistant. He didn't want Dana on that sketch. He didn't want other writers. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories. He was extremely resistant. So he brought Dana in, and then somehow the Turners worked their magic, right? And convinced him to give up his baby a bit. And to me, that's a remarkable thing to do. Because when somebody's tied to a character or a sketch,
oh my gosh,
the way he was, I mean, he had a lot of trouble with Spheeris on the movie because of his vision. Yeah. So the fact that he got along as well with the Turners, because I never hear a negative thing, is remarkable. And that he was able to split that baby four ways, basically, with Dana and then the Turners, is pretty remarkable when he came in with this, nobody can do this but me sort of attitude. Ugh. So to me, that says a lot about them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too, Shari. Just a really, I don't know, a tour de force, I guess would be the word you would use if they were actors. I don't know if you can use that in writing, but I'm going to. Joe, what do you think?
I just want to really, really mention the diner sketch with Jan Hooks and Alec Baldwin. That is something where, like, that you forget that it's live. Like, that's almost like a Kids in the Hall sketch where they could do it over and over again, because it is rapid fire dialogue. Each line has to, you know, is a setup for the next line, and it is almost like a mini drama, like a mini, like, dare I say, opera or something, you know, like just that rapid fire back and forth, you know, and then every line just leads into the, you know, next. But it is a sketch where you need to be dead on, and everyone in that sketch is a suspect either in the Hall of Fame or a nominee, where you got Kevin Nealon, Phil Hartman, Jan Hooks, you know, I think Nora Dunn's the only one that's not, And it is just perfect. And to know that it was done, you know, I mean, like, obviously, you know, they rehearsed it in dress rehearsal, but they did it live and they nailed it like that. You know, you don't see basketball plays or football plays done that well. It is something one after another. And it reminds me of all the best sketches, the Bill Brasky sketches, where it is just, written perfectly. I hate using the word perfect because it's a contradiction. You need to be imperfect to be perfect. I'm not going to go down that well. But it is as close to perfection as you get in the writing. And then as far as the acting, not one flipped line, not one, stumble over a word. It is just, like with the acting, it's intense almost. And you forget it's supposed to be a Southern diner. Go ahead.
You're actually in the scene with them. And you're right. If they had flubbed a line, a line or anything like that, it would have pulled you right out. And they didn't pull you out. You're there. It's so funny.
So I recommend everyone listening to this, if you're in your car and when you get to the red light, watch this sketch. pull over. Whatever.
Wait till you get home.
Okay. Let's say for do not sue us. What I say does not represent this SNL network or any of its affiliates. But when you get home, when you get to a safe location, when you feel comfortable, get yourself a drink, get yourself a snack, and watch this sketch. Get yourself a full feast. Even though the sketch is 4 minutes long, I'm just saying it's one of the best with all of the best in it. You got the best host, the best cast members, and to go back to what we're talking about, some of the best writers who deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, Bonnie and Suri Turner.
Well put.
Off of my soapbox.
Okay. That was really well put, Joe. Just a Rushmorean performance by the participants involved. John and Bill both seem right on board with this nomination as well. And let's get to their final argument, or John, rather,'s final argument right now.
Here's your chance. What should voters in SNL factor in when they consider the Turner's place in SNL history and in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, there have been a lot of really brilliant writers that have contributed to Saturday Night Live history. I know that in the voting in the past for the SNL Hall of Fame, they haven't always gotten their due. But I think in this final year of the SNL Hall of Fame, we need to consider about if we're going to close the book for now on people who get in from the history of the show. We need to have people in there who properly tell the story of the show from. And I think that they are huge contributors about of the renaissance of the show in the late 80s and early 90s. And I don't think the show is as good without them. So for me, when you're talking about some of the greatest writers in SNL history, they have to be included here. And if they don't get in, I'm glad that we at least gave them their due today.
Yeah, well put, John. Well put. I think he makes a really salient point that if they don't get in, based on what I'm hearing from Joe and Shari and my own personal experience, I thought this episode was really good. And I learned a lot that I didn't know. This is a subject that I don't know a whole lot about. And I learned a whole lot about. So like John said, worst case scenario, we now are more aware than we were before. Shari, do you have anything you want to add about the closing argument?
I mean, as usual, John just makes such excellent points, and he's so articulate, and he doesn't need a lot of words to say. He's absolutely right. The Turners are needed to tell the story of Saturday Night Live, just like Franken and Davis, just like Odenkirk, just like Handy, just like Smigel. I wrote down a metaphor that I really think is perfect. Each one of them is a vertebrae in the spine of SNL. They hold and make
Ooh, I love that.
They hold it up and make it great. If there wasn't all of these vertebrae, these writers, I don't care how great the cast is, they're not going anywhere without the writing. And each one of those cast members talked about how they needed to work with a writer to make things perfect. And that's exactly what the Turners did for Jan. That's what they did for Wayne's World. That's what they did after, like, Joe, thank you for mentioning Tommy Boy. I'm not the hugest fan of it, but it attests to their greatness. And each one of them, like I said, they're the vertebrae that is keeping to this day, because now we've got Jost and, you know, all these other great writers, Che and so many I can't think of, Streeter, Tina Fey, Adam McKay. Each one of them is a vertebrae that is keeping SNL upright. And it would collapse without them.
Oh, that is damn good. Follow that, Joe.
Wow. I can't. I mean, you nailed it. I'm kind of speechless now. I'm like, it's like the foot where it keeps moving. I got nothing. I mean, like, you nailed it. I mean, like, because you nailed why just writers are important. And sure, they didn't. Their names may not be as well known as, like, Conan O'Brien, who had their own show, and, you know, or even Smigel, who, you know, had TV Funhouse and Comedy Central. Like, their names may not, like, or how about this? They're not even out there, you know, publicly, like, doing talk shows. Like, the first time I think I heard their voice was on Fly in the Wall, when that was about a couple months ago. And I recommend people listen to that as well. But, I got nothing. She nailed it. I'm throwing in. I'm taking a knee. I got nothing. You nailed it, Shari.
All right. Let's move on and talk about the January 18th episode of SNL, hosted by Timothy Chalamet. Musical guest, Timothy Chalamet. I'm curious if you have any Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame moments. And this week, we're going to start with the Hall of Shame because I want to end on a positive note. So, Joe, do you have a Hall of Shame moment or a con, as you might say?
So, yeah, to go with the con, I kind of had a tie, and I'll start with the – because, again, if you want to end on a good note, then I'll bring up the one that I thought was the worst one between the two. Grandma's birthday, which is – the joke was, for anyone to remember, you know, just to refresh, and I – the word fresh won't be mentioned this much – is a doctor revived an old woman at her birthday. Instead of using CPR, he used a fart. And now, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Beavis and Butthead, South Park. I mean, I'll get in there. But to me, like, it has to be clever. Like, that's my favorite thing about Beavis and Butthead, is they're clever in their stupidity. I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but it just seems like this was written like by an 8-year-old. Like, I don't know, like some dad was like, hey, asked his 8-year-old son, like, do you have any ideas for a sketch? How about a old woman gets revived by a fart? And, you know, and then they, like, as a dare, made it into a full-blown sketch. And it just turned me off. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I know what, sometimes I joke with my dad that his farts sound like questions, because they go up at the end. Like, that to me is clever, because it goes, and it's like, I make a joke, and that's clever. You're putting thought into it.
Joe.
Okay. See, that's the thing. That's my point. Is, like, not every person likes that humor. It's not, you know, so even I, who kind of likes it, that one turned me off. I mean, that one, now, to end on a little bit of a more positive note, to get people's minds back, there was also the dog park sketch, which, again, I'm like, that felt something from All of That. You know, Kenan Thompson. I don't know why I brought his name up. But no, it just felt like a juvenile sketch. And it was done well, don't get me wrong. But I think they did that once before when John Goodman hosted back in like 2000. Because I remember Dan Aykroyd cameoed. Only that one, it was a dog restaurant. And, you know, people were ordering like bowls of water and stuff like that. And they were wearing dog ears. And I'm like, there's nothing to this other than, you know, when you think of like a human dog park, this is exactly what you think of, and then it doesn't go on any further. And then also there was Bear City, which is a better version of like this idea. And that's another one. I don't want to get into it because I don't want to take up too much time. But when you get to a safe location with drink and snacks, Look up that one. Look up Bear City. That
you
one.
You gotta be kidding me, Joe.
A pre-taped one, and it's hilarious.
More homework.
But yeah, those are my cons.
Yeah, those are great cons. But do you know what the cons of our audience are right now? Mm-hmm. All the homework that you're giving them. Shari, you don't have homework for them, do you? What do you have to say about all this? What is your Hall of Shame moment?
Well, Joe took my, I had two as well, and Joe took one of them. I, you know, it's still.
Sorry.
Oh, no, well, big deal. I had a second, and it was the one I was going to go with anyways. But yeah, I mean, that had such a good cast, and Jeremy does his darndest. And Sarah as the grandma, you know, I love my Sarah. I love my Sarah Squirm. So I feel like they can breathe a little life into it. But Joe made absolutely excellent points. It just didn't feel like the writing was there. It definitely felt like a 10-1. But as John and Bill both always say, those 10-1s can be golden, right? But that unfortunately was not one of the golden 10-1s. The one I was really amazed started the show. It was the first sketch after the monologue. And I'm an exercise person. Like, I'm all about exercise. So I was excited to see a premise that involved exercise. Because I love the Pilates sketch they did not long ago. Super funny. And some accuracy to it. But this bungee one, I know friends who've done these workouts. And I was disappointed. I think they could have done a lot more.
Me too.
Jamming everybody's face into a cake is, yeah, you can get a laugh. Just like with farting, cake in the face gets a laugh. But it seems like a cheap shot here. It seems like they're just trying to find a way to keep this joke going. And again, great, great cast here. Longfellow, you know, singing his praises last week.
Yep.
He tries really hard. Timothy tries really hard. Heidi tries really hard. But it just, for me, it's so flat. I don't know.
Yeah.
I believe they cut several sketches that all sounded better than this one. And what? Lauren decides to order the sketches. What made him pick this one to kick off the show? It just, I don't know. Little disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I felt as well with that. Yeah, it would be great to be in the room, wouldn't it? The room where it happens. What Aaron Burr might call it. You know what I'm saying? Alexander Hamilton fans in the room. Anyway, Shari, do you want to continue on with your Hall of Fame moment?
Okay. I hate to sound like a broken record. For you kids listening to this who don't know what a record is, it's a wax disc. No, I'm joking. I know records are back now, so kids actually know what it is, because records and record players are back. But yeah, Update's been on fire these past two episodes. It was my favorite this time as well. And at first I just said the correspondence, but then I went back because like you, JD, my memory's a little, shaky. And I didn't quite remember the update. I just remembered that I really liked it. And I was just giving the correspondents credit. But man, Shay and Jost had some zingers. They had some great, great jokes. I love the Abe Lincoln. I'm not going to flesh it out too much. I'll give you homework too. Watch that update. It's funny. Yeah, there's a great Abe Lincoln and Donald Trump comparison and how they could learn from each other. And then Che makes a great joke about the one-eyed January 6th participant. Hey, ladies, he's single just like his eye. I mean, come on. So funny, so silly. But then the piece de resistance is the two correspondents. First, my girl Ego, who I know I've said on here time and time again. I love, 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 love. And all those people who play or hate and say, oh, she plays the same character, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, so does Heidi Gardner. So did Cecily Strong. And guess what? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're funny. And she was hilarious with her hair weave and calling Che twin. Oh, the look on Che's face when she keeps calling him twin is priceless. So gold star for Ego, as always. And then, of course, got to give John Schneider a little shout out because he got me thinking about Andrew Dismukes, who is so quirky and so funny, and not only as a cast member, but as a writer, one of the best, talking about writers. Dismukes is so clever with his turns of phrases. And that bit with the dad puppet and the 17th most important cast member. And then
I love that puppet.
Oh, I love the puppet too. And then he turns to Joe's because, you know, everybody's got to roast Joe's. And says, don't you worry, Colin. You're the 16th most important cast member. I about lost my shiznit. And then puppet dad caps it off, giving Joe cigarettes as a gift.
So absurd. So absurd. And you're right. It's the Dismukes. I almost feel like we haven't been able to recognize like a cast member's sketch. I guess Beck Bennett and Kyle Mooney, you could sort of tell their stuff. But I was thinking Will Forte, you know, like that's going way back. You could sort of.
Who Dismukes gets compared to a lot. John compares the two of them frequently, and there are many similarities. And Dismukes has said that he absolutely idolizes.
Oh, wow.
So it all makes sense.
Huh. Joe, do you have a Hall of Fame moment?
Now, don't judge me. Don't read too much into this, but I really liked the Oedipal sketch, the flowers for Mom, because I'm not going to lie. I think I said this last week where I didn't know where the sketch was going. I think I said that with the Chappelle evacuation sketch where I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, it's a flower sketch. Like, where's the turn? And then it went hard. Oh, God, ignore the pun. I don't know. I don't even know what to say because I don't want to say grosses me out, but weirds me out, I think is the more appropriate word. And to call the dad I'll say the word if it's on Saturday Night Live already, a cuck or whatever.
Yeah, Mikey and Day, cuck again.
And it was just, oh my God. I feel so embarrassed even talking about it, but that's the thing. It's like, that's what Saturday Night Live should do. Like, even right from the beginning with Replacement Husband, this feels like a somewhat weird cousin to that. Like, I feel so embarrassed talking about it. Just again, for the third time, just watch it.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, Lorne Michaels, you're getting a lot of plugs from this. Just saying.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my, I don't want to get into it, but I really liked that one.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And you're right. Sometimes that uncomfortableness, I'm looking at you, Tim Robinson. Yeah, because that awkwardness, that uncomfortableness can make for just fantastic comedy, because I think it disarms the audience to a certain degree, the awkwardness, because they're thinking about, they're almost embarrassed for you. And then you can, you know, whammo, hit them over the head with whatever you're going to hit them over the head with.
That's what we
got for you this week. I want to thank Joe and Shari. Of course, I want to thank Bill Kenny. I want to thank John Schneider. And I want to thank our friend Matt Ardill. Next week on the program, I'm excited to welcome back our friend Darren Patterson. And he will be joined by our chief conversationalist, Bill Kenny, to discuss the nomination of the host, Jack Black. That should be another good one. I'm going to head on upstairs now and get back to my day job, my work curating the Hall of Fame. Joe and Shari, thanks again. And remember, stay thirsty.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame Water Cooler. To connect with Joe and Shari, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/SNLHOF. To email the cast, write to snlhofwc@gmail.com. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Tuvra. Podcasts and such.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone. Which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.